Welcome to the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society. Welcome to ITSP Magazine. You're listening to a new The Hacker Factory podcast with hacker maker Philip Wiley. You're about to discover what the role of a professional hacker entails, the different specializations it holds, and what it takes to learn and become one. Enjoy the conversation as Philip and guests unveil the secrets of professional hacking, a mysterious, intriguing, and often misunderstood occupation. Knowledge is power, now more than ever.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hacker Factory podcast. I'm your host, Philip Wiley, the Hacker Maker. In each episode, I have a guest sharing their story on how they got started in cybersecurity, as well as their tips on how to get started. So I'm very excited to have joining me today, John McCoy. Welcome to the show, John.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Good to have you. So John and I know each other from InfoSec Twitter, and we've got to meet up a couple times at DEF CON. So John is very heavily involved with OWASP, the Open Web Application Security Project. So this would be someone to be able to share some information on. I don't think we really had anyone that's mentioned much about OWASP. We've mentioned some of the aspects of OWASP, like OWASP testing guide and OWASP top 10, but really not much about OWASP. So welcome. Thanks for joining.
Nice. It's great to get to talk about security and deep dive with the community. This is awesome. I do a Twitter space every Saturday. I do open office hours. People can show up and get professional advice. I support projects for free, and I literally donate professional services on Twitter. Like, show up Saturdays. The John McCoy. Like,
very cool. So before we get started, why don't you share about your background?
Sure. So I was a hardcore developer, C++, eventually C#, and I was in the beta of C#. I was pulling that thing apart. I was finding vulnerabilities in it as a developer. And before I knew it, I was ending up in a computer forensics master's class. And I went from a developer that was really skilled to a security engineer that could pull apart malware or reverse engineer. And I eventually started making tools that allowed you to raw edit binary applications. And my goal was to make binary compiled applications basically open source, where you could have a nice little GUI. It would show you like C# code, and you could just change it and raw edit applications, not decompile, but raw editing. So, and before you knew it, I was making really cool cracks and malware, and I was just popping open applications and editing in them to get severe vulnerabilities. And I submitted that to DEF CON, and they appreciated it. That was kind of coming in hard, just like, I'm going to make all the malware I can.
Very cool. It's yeah. A good example to hear someone that the coding background helped, because the people are always asking the question whether that is a requirement or not. Mm.
Well, I'm an AppSec engineer, so I'm as much of a software architect as a security architect. I need to be able to read GitHub PR commits. I need to be able to make architecture diagrams that can hold up against any review of the software dev team. And yeah, I actually take a year or two off now and then and go and take a job as a peer developer just to get back in the trenches and like, has anything changed? Like, I'm like kind of just keeping my skills sharp. Yeah.
That's a good idea, because I'm sure it's the difficulty of learning how to code and then just giving up those development skills, that would be pretty tough after spending that time. So yeah, you speaking of interesting projects, so now you've been doing some blockchain related stuff. I remember you discussing.
Yep. So I came into application security through esports and Blizzard and games and digital money. And I went from Blizzard to Amazon doing esports. And before I knew it, I was ending up in fintech, because there's a little bit of an overlap there. And I love the security in fintech, the security designs and protocols and standards in fintech is next level. And before you knew it, I was over in blockchain because that's also fintech and it pays incredibly well. And it turns out no one has quite solved that whole blockchain security thing yet. So lots of fun.
Yeah, at least that was good timing to get in there at the time, because I know there's, I mean, even now it's been around but a little bit, but not all the resources like there are in some more established areas of security and development.
A lot of it is green field, like some around contracts, and like there's a little bit of security forming in companies and a little bit of best practices and known vulnerabilities. But for much of blockchain, it's completely green field, not even base layer guidelines or papers or vulnerability lists or risks identified whatsoever. Yeah.
So kind of where did you find your resources to learn about blockchain?
When I jumped into it, I asked all my security friends, and of course, A, they don't know blockchain, and B, most of them hate blockchain. So I went to my classical OWASP. I went and looked in our security knowledge hub of like, do we have any cheat sheets or best practices or top tens? Or I went to my hacker friends to see what was there. I ended up helping one of my hacker friends make his first CTF that involved blockchain. And Jonathan Marcel, he did a really nice NORSEC CTF flag that was blockchain centric. And I looked everywhere I would normally look and just didn't. There just wasn't. And so some of my friends needed help with their projects, and they're like, hey, what's the security? How do I defend against this? And I just started jumping in with the projects themselves and offering security services. I do it in general before blockchain. I offered free security services to new startups or 501c3s or anyone that couldn't afford security but could need it. I offered free security. And in blockchain, I started getting wallets and projects that actually needed security. And I started helping them. I started helping recently NFT projects that needed security, and just offering services. And that's really where I learned the attacks. I learned the security. I learned the defensive paradigms that I could recommend and what the developers would like and not like, and just kind of jumping in and doing it. Like, yeah.
Very cool. So yeah, it's one of my favorite ways to learn is hands-on. Cause you know, it just seems to me, you just learn it better, because even if you're going the route of reading or whatever, watching videos, then you got to go back and do that yourself to be able to, you know, understand how it's truly done.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of how did you must be really good at self-learning to be able to figure out some of these things on your own that you really didn't have resources for. Are there any tips or tricks you have for self-learning, figure out how to learn these things on their own when there really aren't resources?
I mean, my main metaphor is it's kind of like going to the gym. If you do it 1 hour a day, you'll get stronger over a month. If you do it 10 hours a day at the end of a year, you'll be a beast. Like, it's all just, and try to make it fun. Try to find a project that speaks to you. It doesn't have to be economically viable. It doesn't have to be whatever. Like I would just make keygens against applications because I could. Like, I wasn't selling them. I wasn't doing this for some prize. Like, most of them I never released in any capacity, but I made like 200 keygens. I got really good at making keygens. And then I put together an example keygen project for other people to crack. And I ripped out keygens from multiple applications and did a combined application example. I just did things and got really strong at it. And then you just jump in and start. Find something that you can be passionate about for 1 hour and do that, and then jump in the next day. And maybe it's something else. Maybe it's the same thing. And then try and find. I would also say if it's something everyone else knows how to do and there's lots of them, like like pen, like scanning web pages for vulnerabilities. There's thousands of people, there's thousands of CFT conferences, there's lots of trainings, there's lots of books. It's like, that's probably best done by pulling the information from the community. And if you, that is probably best done pulling information from the community and not having, not necessarily going out and doing blind research yourself. If you can find something new that not everyone is doing, that no one's focused on, that no one's doing a DEF CON talk, that something kind of greenfield and that speaks to your skill set, then that's something that if you do self-learning and get ahead and you can build one tool that no one else has in the community and you can bring that tool back to the community, that's super valuable. So if you do go down self-learning, try and build a tool, try and build a trophy, try and build something that shows off you got to the end of it. And yeah.
Very cool. I think it's an interesting concept of, you know, not staying on the same thing if something else interests you and you're really passionate spending time on that, because I think too many times people get stuck doing that same thing, trying to learn it, and they kind of get burnt out or not interested and then just give up on it altogether. So that's an interesting way to learn.
And if something's hard, build a tool.
So as far as like on the code, on the concept or the subject of coding and development, I know a lot of people always ask, do they need to learn how to code to get into security? So what are your thoughts on that? And then also, you know, how could it be helpful in advancing someone's career if they decide to do that?
Yeah, good question. I kind of phrase security as a good second career. So if you're a tax accountant and you pick up security, you can do forensics tax accounting, you can do auditing and compliance, and you can run down these things that you can do because you're a tax accountant, and you can apply them to the security field. If you're a developer, then you go into application security. If you're a network engineer, maybe you do DevSecOps. Maybe you do cloud infrastructure hardening or logging and alerting and advanced IR infrastructure development. If you're a red teamer, maybe you go into intrusion response or pen testing or, so do you need to be a software developer? No. If you are a software developer, there are certain jobs that fit you better than others. So I'm a AppSec security engineer. I work with the SDLC. I work with developers during their design and architecture and development and deployment. I work over the whole life cycle of the product end to end. And being a software developer is critical for that job. I have to know what developers do for merging branches. And I need to know what the best practices for Git repos are. And I need to understand how they do scrums and ticketing and backlogs and grooming. And if I don't understand that, then how can I write a ticket to be integrated into a team if I don't know that you need to get it in their grooming backlog and you need to get their lead engineer to plan it into the sprint? And so you have to know software development to harden software development. You have to know networking to harden networking. You have to know the underlying skill to do security for it. So, yeah.
So if someone is wanting to start out coding nowadays, what would you recommend? What language to learn?
Oh, by far, C# is the best. today, if they're planning on ultimately going into security, I would say blockchain. Like, you should target, if you're going into school right now, say this is a 4-year, 8-year endeavor, and you're going to come out the other side in 4-8 years, what should you target in the future is my question. Like, hey, today, I don't know, WAFs are big or whatever, SQL databases are big, right? I don't know. And it's like, hey, if you're targeting 5 years in the future, you need to be serverless. You need to be looking at cloud-centric Dynamo or whatever, NoSQL databases. And in 4 to 8 years, blockchain, specifically Solidity, contract coding on Ethereum, learning how blockchains work and are deployed and built and how dApps are deployed and built. and target 4 to 8 years in the future, because if it's a job today, it could be automated. You could be going into being an ops engineer, and it's like, well, in 8 years, we have a tool that does that. So if it's a job today, target in the future, target something that doesn't even exist yet.
That's some good advice too, because when you look at cloud, you know, a few years ago, I don't know, 5 years ago, how hardly anyone knew cloud or cloud security, and then the people that really jumped in there and started learning it really benefited from it, because cloud pays pretty good. But you see, you know, you mentioned the blockchain. I hardly see anyone doing anything with that. So that just seems like a great opportunity there.
Yeah. And if you're in school today, you'll be able to do more time and research, and you'll understand it better than I can. Because I'm not going to spend 8 hours a day learning it. Just not gonna. Like, I'm a practitioner. I'm on the front lines. Like, I'm on the other side. Like, if you're in school today, you'll be able to know blockchain better than I do. And I won't be able to compete with you, and you'll be able to outcompete me on my primary focus of blockchain. Like, that's how the world works. That's awesome.
Yeah, very good advice there. So what about certifications? Do you think, feel like those are needed to get into the field?
Well, the good news, there's no blockchain security certification. So, so maybe back to my 5 years in the future, if it's a certification, that's already losing the game. Like, it's a certification, then you pass that right on by.
Yeah. but then one day you'll be applying for a job and they'll require this certain certification, and you've been in it all this time. You see some of the ridiculous requirements for jobs sometimes.
Oh yeah. Oh, the other, there's a hack of it. Say you do blockchain security, you need to start doing that as a professional job, either in school or immediately when you graduate. I don't care that there's no jobs in it. I don't care that no one's hiring. I don't care that it's not even a thing yet. It's like, open a consultancy and immediately start offering services, and go find a client, even if it has to be free or $100 or $1,000. And ironically, the more you charge, the more they'll appreciate your services. So don't undersell yourself, or else you won't get work. But immediately start offering your services. So when you go to a job 4 years later and they say, oh, what's your history? It's like, oh, I've been doing professional blockchain security for 4 years. Like, that's legit. And it could easily take you 4 years to find a job exiting school. Like, security is hard. Like, you could find a job immediately after school. It could be 4 years of like trying to find your market niche and where you fit in a company to hire you, and not just bring you in as like a intern that just gets grunt shit work. Like, it could take, I mean, security is a hustle. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Very good. Interesting advice there. So what about degrees? Do you feel like those are needed? And a lot of people, you know, I can see both, but you know, you hear a lot of people really being negative towards that, but I was just curious what your thoughts are on degrees.
I mean, I loved school. Like, it was the one time I could spend 8 or 16 hours a day on a computer for 6 months and not have to justify myself. Like, oh, I'm doing school. That's why I spent the last 9 months on a computer. And it's like, if I wasn't in school, that'd be a little weird. That'd be hard to justify. I don't know. I liked being in the research lab. I liked working with other brilliant people and seeing what they're working on and being able to show them what I'm working on. I loved it. Like, if you can find a research lab, then that is the best. That's nice. If you can find strong teachers that are really skilled in their profession and you can learn from them, that's awesome. But also, if you go to a conference and you can find someone that's teaching a class and just go ask them if you can sit on their class, or after their class is over during the conference, see if you can pick their brains about what tools they use. Like, you can learn directly from the community, and a lot of us did and do, but also, you can get really good cyber training nowadays, I think. So, is it important? Absolutely not. Does it help? Yeah, maybe at big name Amazon, Google, whatever, it helps. Yeah, it doesn't shut any doors if you don't have it. Does it make much of a difference? Probably not, but yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting to hear the different, you know, because a lot of people base things on their experience, but it just seems like to me, I mean, I just think when someone asks me, I think if someone wants to be in cybersecurity, I think, especially if they're wanting to do something like exploit development or some of these other interesting things or security research, that if they start out with like a computer science degree and then learn security, I think some cases they'd be better off than just going the traditional security route.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like I said, it's a secondary skill. How do you do IT security if you never did IT? Like you're securing something you have no idea how to build or maintain. It's like you can't build the test to even check to see if it's valid because you never did it. And it's like, yeah, you definitely need to be able to do whatever you think you're securing.
It seems like there'd be a lot of benefit too on learning how to do, you know, research compared to just trying to learn it on your own.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I would say if you do go to school, you still have to do your own research. Like they're going to show you the tools for how to do assembly code. They're going to show you the tools to how to do networking and configurations. But then it's up to you to go and deploy it, go and use it, go and dig into it, like run the extra mile. And it's like, and just like the 1 hour a day, if you enjoy assembly code, do it for 8 hours a day, do it for 6 months, get really good, weaponize it, build tools, build cool things. Or you get into assembly code and you're like, this is garbage. Then don't do it. Do something else. Like maybe you're into networking. Maybe you're into forensics metadata recovery or something. So, yeah.
Yeah. So before, I don't want to miss the opportunity. This would be a great opportunity to hear more about OWASP. If you could share about OWASP with our listeners.
So OWASP got me out of writing malware and trying to send vaguely threatening emails to companies where I just like find vulnerabilities and be like, do you want to pay me? Because I have worse stuff. I can destroy your world. I'm going to show some of it on stage. I'm going to hurt your company. You should pay me. Like that was my career A path. And OWASP brought different paths to me that were outside of the hacking community. So I met operations and DevSecOps people and security architects and really cool skills that were adjacent. They're almost like the same skills that we use in the hacking side, but just kind of inverted a little bit, like the same skills, but the other side of the coin. So you have things like, how do you do lateral pivoting and escalation of privilege in a network and systems, and how do you move around? And it's like, you flip that on its head and it's DevSecOps. How do you build security guardrails? How do you lock down an environment? How do you build logging and detection? And it's exactly the same skill. If you don't know the other one, like say you're an attacker and you don't understand the defensive side, you need to come and learn about how logging and alerting happens. You can come to OWASP. You can come and see what an ELK stack looks like, what good security auditing and logging looks like, where alarms are typically set, how they're set, where they feed to. And if you're an attacker and you don't understand that, then you're not as good as you could be. And so OWASP has a lot of the best practices of everything. Like, PCI compliance is derived from OWASP recommendations of best practices. And a lot of the standards are defined in OWASP. It's a group, worldwide, non-corporate, non-vendor. It's a 501c3. Everything is open source. All of the security is open source, best practices, cheat sheets. And it's kind of bringing together all of the best focus from the security community. Zap is a free scanning tool. And so Zap pulls in a scanning report. The scanning report is mapped against the OWASP top 10. And then the OWASP top 10 and the scanning report are mapped against cheat sheets. And cheat sheets are what you can give to a developer to remediate the problem. So you find injection in a field. Okay, well, how do you stop injection? What are the best practices? How do you know you did it correctly? How do you sanitize on JavaScript or HTML5 and And there's a cheat sheet to walk you through it. Again, from OWASP. Like, we're other people fighting the same fight, pooling our resources. Almost every major city has an OWASP chapter. They typically meet monthly. You can just go to OWASP, look up your local chapter, and it'll be like, oh, on the 3rd, you come to this building, you come to this door at this time. It's a presentation. Typically, there's a food, and a vendor has footed the bill for the location, for the food. You have a speaker. You have security people. You don't have to be a member. It's $50 to become a member for a year. I mean, it doesn't matter. You can show up and get a talk locally from a white hat security expert. And it's not just white hats. Like, we have DEF CON talks. We have hackers in the community. We do hacker outreach at DEF CON. Like, it's not just white hats. Like, it's the skill of security. So
very cool. Yeah, actually, through a OWASP meeting, one of our Dallas OWASP chapter meetings, I got one of my pen test jobs through there. Well, the guy, I was ready to get out of consulting because I was having to travel too much. And the guy presenting was working at U.S. Bank, where I ended up going to work. And he was saying, yeah, we've got openings if anyone's interested. So I'd passed on my resume. So good places to network. So long lines, yeah. So while we're on this subject, I think we should dig into community. How valuable do you think that is to someone starting out?
Starting out, yeah. You probably don't have a community yet. Like, step one, yeah. Find your people because later on it'll become invaluable. I've gotten a couple of jobs that weren't from recommendations, but all of my good career moves, all of my moving to a really strong company at the right time were all people I knew. And so I think it's essential, both building a reputation. People know you, they can vet you. Security is a small community. And often when I meet someone, I know someone that has worked or knows their research or knows of them or went to the same hacker space as them or OWASP space. Like, it's a small community and it's good to look up people and see what they're about and have a reputation. And it's something that will give you lots of resources and power and opportunities because the community is filled with people that are happy to teach or share or, the security community has a lot of powerful resources of people. And if you can find a way to give back to the community, then that typically really is valued. People see it and people appreciate it. And it helps you build a name, a reputation, helps you build a skill set. And you're the person that made that really cool scanner that they now deploy at their company, or you're the one that figured out the rule set that is now deployed by that scanner, or whatever. Whatever your niche, if you can do one tiny thing to move the community forward, people appreciate it and see it.
Yeah, we're down towards the end of the show. Is there any advice or closing comments you'd like to share?
I guess whether you're if you go to DEF CON or OWASP, you should probably consider going to the other one. And that when you meet the community and get hands-on with the community, you'll find that they're essentially all the same people. It's all the same skill sets, whether you're at OWASP or DEF CON. They have a passion for this area. They enjoy encryption or authentication. And finding people with diverse skill sets is amazingly powerful. And so if you can pick the brain of someone from an IR team about your area, then you could get ideas for how they would attack it. Diversity in the community really will build your skill sets faster. So try different things, reach out to different communities. And to plug it, OWASP has a diversity scholarship. And so if you've never come to AppSec USA or some of the local conferences, you can apply to get a free ticket to build our community stronger, to bring in people that would never normally attend our conferences. And so if you're a college student going to DEF CON, there's probably a free ticket in the diversity scholarships at OWASP for you. So. or outreach scholarship.
Sorry. Great advice. Thanks for taking time out of your busy schedule to join. It was an honor to have you on the show.
Yeah, this was great. I love it. And thanks for building this. This is part of community. This is what keeps us going and helps share the information. I appreciate this so much.
It's an honor. It's just a way to direct people to other people that they can learn from. And it's just interesting the way the different episodes resonate differently with people. They see someone else has been in this area. They went to the same school. They had the same background, had the same former career. And you know, they can kind of identify with that, and it's interesting. So it's good to have the different voices and different stories.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you. Thanks everyone for joining, and we'll see you on the next episode.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Hacker Factory podcast with Philip Wiley. If you learned something new and this podcast made you think, then share ITSBmagazine.com with your friends, family, and colleagues. If you represent a company and wish to associate your brand with our conversations, sponsor one or more of our podcast channels. We hope you will come back for more stories and follow us on our journey. You can always find us at the intersection of technology, cybersecurity, and society.